Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, July 11th, 2010.
Turn in your Bibles to the 127th Psalm. Psalm 127 and Psalm 128, both very short psalms, are twins, we might say, or at least the second answers to the first. So let us first read through these two psalms together. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives his beloved sleep. Behold, children are an heritage of the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of your labor, of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children, and may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. It is said by some in explaining these songs of degrees that this 127th psalm was sung as the pilgrims entered into the temple. It's a very old tradition, it may be so, but really these psalms are not about the temple primarily. They're not about the city, primarily. They are prototypes of what the psalmist is really trying to say. First, let us look at the title to the song. A song of ascents, or of degrees, of Solomon. So we go from last week's 126th Psalm about the returned captives who are rebuilding Jerusalem after a long captivity in Babylon, back to the days of David, or perhaps almost, because this Psalm of Solomon, translated of, is but a single letter in the Hebrew, and it is attached to the word following, and it has a number of meanings. It means of, to, for, by, and about, and it has other uses also. So whether this psalm was written by Solomon, as some claim, whether it was written for Solomon by David, as others claim, and we'll see why they say that in a minute, or whether it was written by someone who was using them as prototypes for something he was trying to say, quite different, which is what I believe. Unless the Lord builds the house, that is the temple, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, that is Jerusalem, the watchman stays awake in vain. This obviously refers to the temple and to Jerusalem, but as a pattern for what he has to say. It is vain for you to rise up early and to go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives his beloved sleep. On first reading, it would seem like this is kind of a patchwork psalm. And yet, it is a very closely knit psalm. Notice the verbs in these first two verses. Builds, labor, watches, stays awake, rise up, eating, toil, sleep. It's a very busy psalm. Solomon undoubtedly was a very busy man. But all of these are action verbs. Two of them refer to the Lord, unless the Lord watches over, and the Lord gives his beloved sleep. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build labor in vain. Truly, that was true of the temple. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Truly, that was true of the city also. But then, perhaps he is picturing Solomon on all of this. It is vain for you to rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives his beloved rest. Solomon was the great builder. But primarily this psalm is not about Solomon, it's about building and buildings, plural. We read about Solomon's building of the temple in 1 Kings chapter 6, beginning with verse 1. In the 480th year after the people of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, he began to build the house of the Lord. The house that King Solomon built for the Lord was 60 cubits long, that is 90 feet long, 20 cubits wide, that is 30 feet wide, and 30 cubits high. 30 feet high. And he goes on to describe the temple that Solomon was building. So Solomon, shortly after he acceded to the throne, began to take all of the materials that David had assembled for the house of the Lord and to put them together. Now, of course, he didn't do that by himself, but he ordered it done, and his subjects did it. And then we read, after Solomon had finished the house of the Lord, he built his own palace. In chapter 7 of 1 Kings, Solomon was building his own house 13 years, and he finished the entire house. He built the house of the forest of Lebanon. Its length was 100 cubits, 150 feet. Its breadth 50 cubits, 75 feet. And its height 30 cubits, that is 4 stories high, of our, as we reckon, stories. That was quite a palace. How would you like to clean that palace and keep it in order? And then in the 9th chapter of 1 Kings, we read, "As soon as Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house, and all that Solomon desired to build, the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time, as he appeared to him in Gibeon, and told Solomon that he had heard his prayer, that he would answer his prayer, and he would prosper Israel if they would walk in the ways of David, his father." But as we know, he did not really do that. And yet, we also read in the 3rd chapter of 1 Kings, and in verse 3, Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and made offerings at the high places. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. He started out well. He loved the Lord. He built a house of the Lord. But somehow, over time, whether it was from staying up late and rising early and eating the bread of anxious toil, the cares of life, the cares of the kingdom, or whatever it was, we know that Solomon didn't continue his close-held love for the Lord. For as an old man he wrote, "Vanity of vanity, all is vanity," or "emptiness, emptiness, all is empty." It doesn't sound like a happy man. Doesn't sound like a man who had lived his life for the Lord. So something happened to Solomon in the meantime, which is one of the keys to this psalm here. "It is vain for you to rise up early, to go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives his beloved sleep." I once read a motivational article in a magazine for sales. It said, if you are making 6 calls a day, if you were to make 8 calls a day, you could increase your income by 30%. So I started making 8 calls a day. Then 9, then 10, and all I got was more tired. It is in vain for you to rise up early and to go late to rest. Now, this does not have to do with the healthy habit of getting up in the morning early, or of necessity staying up late at night at times. It has to do with being caught up in your work, caught up in your life, so that you aren't the master of your career. Your career is your master. How many of you can agree with that it is vain to live such a life as that? The second one reads almost like another psalm entirely. "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb, a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, or children are are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. The point here is Solomon neglected his family. He became an Eastern potentate. He built a harem and filled it with wives. And that wasn't very complimentary to his first wife that bore his son Rehoboam, was it? Evidently, he didn't do a very good job of teaching Rehoboam either statecraft or interpersonal relationships or anything else, because the young man, listening to his peers instead of his elders, frittered away the kingdom. Perhaps Solomon was too taken up with the matters of state, too taken up with the things of life to bother about living, too preoccupied to realize the treasure of his children, too preoccupied to build his own house. The word house in Hebrew is a very nimble word. It is a root word, which means many other words are formed from it. But it itself has many words and usages. The word house, beit in Hebrew, beth in other forms in the possessive, means a house, a dwelling. It also means a temple, because Hebrew has no word for temple. The house of the Lord is a phrase which means the temple throughout the Old Testament. It also means a palace, for there's no Hebrew word meaning for palace. So the king's house means his palace. It means a house that is a dwelling for a family. It also means a household. The family that lives in that house. It also means a dynasty. Archaeologists in Israel today have uncovered monuments, one of which reads, "The House of David," meaning David and his descendants who were kings. Now, David's line ruled from David's time, about 900 BC, until about 600 BC. That is, about 1,000 BC to 600 BC. That's 400 years. As dynasties go, that's almost unheard of. You might say that the British monarchy is over 1,000 years old, but not the British dynasty. For the British monarchy, as we know, it began with William the Conqueror in 1066, and ended with his son. Then there was another line of French kings of England. I forget whether there's three or four or five. And then another line. Then there were the Tudors and the present dynasty in Britain began about just in the 1700s before the American Revolution. So 400 years is a long time for a line of kings, but finally it came to an end, the House of David. Another monument that they have, someone else excavated in Syria a number of years ago, reads the House of Omri. Now Omri was the founder of a dynasty in the northern kingdom of Israel. He was the father of King Ahab. His dynasty ended with Ahab. So here, this word house has all of these meanings. But primarily here in this psalm, it has to do with an individual household, including the man, the father, and his wife, and their children. So you see, Solomon and the temple and the palace are really what literary figures call motifs or patterns or, to portray what he's trying to say here about an individual person's house. This man is an older man. He has a number of children. Where it says he has his quiver full of them, he means he has a lot of children. And they are children of his youth. He's living with the wife of his youth. He has built his house, and he has built it well. For his children are like arrows in his hands, which was a figure in that time of defenders. His children came to sit in the gate and be defenders in the law of that time. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate, that is, when he's taken into court. So this is an older man who has built his house well. And in the next psalm, it's about a younger man just starting his home, his marriage, his family. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord. So the first centered about the house of Solomon. You don't read about the house of Solomon in the Bible. It's the house of David. Evidently, Solomon wasn't very successful in building his own house. So it reflects back to the house of David. But now, blessed is every man, everyone who fears the Lord. So this psalm is about everyone's house, or anyone's house, that is, who fears the Lord. The Jewish Publication Society's version, English version of this verse is, "Oh, how happy is the man who fears the Lord." Years ago, there was a rage. Happiness is, you fill in the blank. Some of you may remember that. Charlie Schulz took advantage of that in his penis cartoon, and Charlie Schulz said happiness would be winning a baseball game. Linus said happiness is a security blanket. Lucy said happiness is an ice cream cone on a hot day. And Snoopy said happiness is a warm puppy. What would your definition of happiness be? We have one definition in the book of Romans. Happy is the man whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Here, happy is the man who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. So here we see that happiness has boundaries. If we live within those boundaries, we will find true happiness, whether we ever find prosperity or not. The boundaries are, on the one hand, the fear of the Lord, and on the other hand, walking in his ways. The fear of the Lord means a reverent awe. It means submission and obedience. Blessed is every man who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You, now he makes it personal to whoever is reading or hearing the song, you shall eat of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Or you shall be happy, and it shall be well with you. Now, I liked the comments very much that Brother Crook made on his first study in Proverbs, where he said, these are not promises, they are observations. That is, what usually follows what you do, how you live. This is the usual result of this kind of life. The whole world envies this country. That's why we have so many enemies. They're angry at what we have and they don't have. But you know why we have the prosperity, the living standard, and the liberty that we have? It's the result of those who, according to this book, feared the Lord and walked in his ways. Not all of our founding fathers were Christians, of course. But our society was built on the heritage of the gospel. Why do we have what we have? Because of honesty. What other country do you know? Can you think of many countries where graft is the rule rather than the exception? Honesty. Hard work. And thrift, and the other virtues that we value. Sometimes we value more than we do them. That is why we have what we have today. It follows because of what the way this country was built, the way it was lived. And that's the same way here. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat of the fruit of the labor of your hands. you shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. This is for the young man beginning his house. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children shall be like the olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. And then here the psalmist makes a clever play on Hebrew words that doesn't really come through in English, but it's very much to the point. Remember what I said about house? Its many meanings? Well, there's another such word here, builds. Builds in Hebrew is bana. And where did I have that written down here? Bana means to build. It has a very close kindred word, bait, house. A house is that which you build. But it also goes further than that. For sons, or children in the plural, in Hebrews, ben, from bana and bait. And daughters are bat, from the same word. So the one who fears the Lord builds his household, rearing his sons and daughters. Also, in the fear of the Lord, your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. If you're reading the King James Version, it says a fruitful vine on the walls of your house. It was the custom in those days, and yet in many of the eastern countries, to plant grapevines so that they would climb up like ivy over the house, provide coolness and also fruit. One mature grapevine could provide a ton of fruit in a year. But that isn't what the Hebrew says. He says, within your house. Now, you don't plant grapevines inside your house. So this is truly a figure here. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. That is, she'll be fruitful and contented. She'll be a housekeeper. She'll stay at home. Now, of course, we know in our fractured society it isn't always possible for mothers to stay at home. But happy are they who can and do. There is a very misunderstood scripture of the Apostle Paul's, which is very much to this point. It's in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15. Well, we'll go from verse 13. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And Adam was not deceased, but the woman was deceased and became a transgressor. Yet she shall be saved through childbearing, if they continue in faith and love and holiness and self-control. Now again, in the words of Brother Crook, this is not a promise, it's an observation. And it has nothing to do with our faith ensuring childbirth without problems. This word saved in the Greek, like the words we observed in Hebrew in the Psalm, has many meanings. One of the lesser used in Scripture is this. I'll read it this way. She shall find fulfillment in childbearing. Isn't that what every woman would like? Isn't that what every mother wants? Fulfillment in the household, not just the house, but in the family. And that's what the psalmist is saying here. Your wife would be like a fruitful vine within your house. She'll be contented and happy with such a man as this. Behold, and your children shall be like olive shoots around your table. In the Old Testament, the olive tree and the fig tree and the grapevine, especially when mentioned together, are signs of prosperity and peace and contentment. Here are the olive shoots growing up about the table. It's a beautiful picture. As they gather at the table for their meals, and from time to time, a new olive shoot appears, another child. Notice it says around the table. This is a lost art in America today. When our children were little, I've been a little bit older than my brother's children. But I don't think my brother's family ever ate a family meal around the table together. He was almost everyone's for himself, catch as he catch can, whatever he wants to eat. Now we are a whole nation of people like that. And we're keeping up McDonald's and Burger King's and Wendy's and other such places and making them rich. You parents that have young children or growing children, take time together as often as you can, surely once a week, to eat a home-cooked meal around your table all together. I guarantee when your children are grown, those will be the happy times they will remember. And if you want to know what they're learning in school, that's the best time and way to find out. So thus shall the man be who fears the Lord and walks in his ways. We're now more than halfway through these 15 Psalms. They're called Psalms of Degrees or Psalms of Ascents, but they're also called Songs of the Steps. One tradition says, and I believe it's Josephus has said, that the priest would stand on the steps of the temple to recite these or sing these songs. But many, Spurgeon among them, and many even before him, have observed that each of these psalms is a degree in progression in the life of a pilgrim, and to us, a degree in progression into the life of our pilgrimage personally. Each one of these psalms, at least so far, can be summarized in a single word. Notice the progression. Psalm 120, distress. Psalm 121, assurance. Psalm 122, peace. Psalm 123, mercy. Psalm 124, deliverance. Psalm 125, security. Psalm 126, joy and hope. And then Psalm 127, most of these psalms, the very word occurs in the psalm, but in Psalm 127, I say the key word is repose. He gives his beloved sleep. One of the reasons why many people think that David wrote this psalm is because this word beloved is another form of the word David. The word David is the name. Beloved is the adjective. They both have the same consonants. It is just a change of vowels that makes the difference. But he gives his beloved sleep, so the key word here is repose. We can rest in the Lord as we trust in the Lord. And in Psalm 128, contentment. Can you think of greater contentment than to live in a godly home?